Second case, 2022-1391, Randy Ludlow versus the Ohio Department of Health. Thank you, counsel, for agreeing to be here today. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Ford.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy and Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Darren Ford, and I represent appellant Randy Ludlow in this jurisdictional appeal. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court. The Ohio Department of Health's Electronic Death Registration System, or EDRS for short, is the central database of death certificates created in the state of Ohio. It is, as the Special Master for the Court of Claims accurately described, the electronic filing cabinet for every death certificate issued in the state. The overall question in this case is whether the public has a right to access that electronic filing cabinet in full. The legal issue presented in this case is whether revised code section 3701.17, titled Protected Health Information, which I will refer to as PHI for short, applies to the information contained in the EDRS, and specifically whether the cause of death information listed on a death certificate when maintained in the EDRS constitutes protected health information, or PHI. The starting point for this case is a legal principle that the 10th District acknowledged in its decision and that neither party in this case disputes, which is that under RC 3705.231, the public has an unfettered right to inspect an Ohio death certificate and that nothing permits a local registrar to redact the cause of death information before allowing this inspection to occur. Thus, an individual's cause of death, as recorded in a death certificate, is publicly available information. That fact is not disputed in this case. It is a well-settled principle of Ohio public records law that once clothed with a public records cloak, the records cannot be defrocked of their status. But the state's position, and the one adopted by the 10th District, is that RC 3701.17 does precisely that, that once it comes into the possession of ODH, that information, otherwise publicly available through a local registrar's office, becomes protected health information and may be withheld from the public in making a public records request. To put it another way, although the information in a death certificate is indisputably public under RC 3705.231, the state's—
Can someone go and get every death certificate in the state?
Yes, Your Honor.
Without knowing? Without having specific individuals you're asking for?
Yes, Your Honor. The RC 3705.231 essentially says that a local registrar shall make a death certificate available to anyone who requests it. It does not impose any requirements on providing the name of the person. So if someone wanted to walk into a local registrar's office and say, give me a death certificate for every person who died on January 1, 2023, that information is accessible to that local registrar. They can do that search.
But is that a death certificate?
Yes, Your Honor. The section 3705.231 specifically applies to death certificates that are maintained by a local registrar.
Right. It says anyone can request a death certificate, et cetera. But this compilation here is a database of, they are not certificates, are they?
So, Your Honor, it's an electronic form. So the way that the system works is that when a local registrar creates a death certificate, it provides that information, which includes the cause of death information, to the Ohio Department of Health so that they can issue a death certificate number. And then that information that's supplied to ODH is then maintained in this electronic death registration system. The only information in that system is the information that's provided by the local registrars in creating the death certificate.
And so if you wanted to, for insurance purposes, get the death certificate of a spouse or a loved one that you need to submit for life insurance, you can request that death certificate and you are provided one. I think you have to pay for it, correct?
So presumably, I'm not sure an insurance company would ever accept an uncertified copy of it.
Correct.
So let's assume that they need to get a certified copy.
Right.
That's actually a different statute. So that's 3705.23. That statute does require the individual to go into the local registrar to identify who they want the certified copy for, to pay a fee. So there are certain procedural requirements. Now, it doesn't restrict who can do this.
Right.
It simply says you have to pay a fee. And of course, the statute wants to maintain close control over what certified copies are issued. But the very next statute in the revised code says, anyone can walk into the local registrar and make copies, photograph those death certificates. Now, they're not certified, so you wouldn't be able to go to your insurance company and say, hey, this is a true copy, or use it in court. But for purposes of public information, that information is available to anyone who wants
it. So is that the same as I want information, or I guess my struggle is, are we talking, when I think of a death certificate, certified or uncertified, but a certificate is being different from a compilation of death data information.
So I think, and that's the factual rub in this case. So I think importantly, the electronic death registration system is just death certificate information. So there's not other information bleeding into that that could constitute medical records or things of that nature. It's simply that information that when someone says, hey, I need a certified death certificate, the EDRS for that individual will spit out those fields that was supplied ultimately by the local registrar to the ODH. Now, conceivably, if we go back in time before electronic databases, ODH maintained a physical copy of every death certificate in the state. If someone wanted to go in and thumb through every single physical death certificate, it wouldn't be a compilation per se, because it wouldn't be nice in a nice format.
I guess I'm confused why any of this matters when we have a statute 3701.17b that seems directly on point and that you haven't mentioned yet. So I mean, that's.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the last part of your question.
That you haven't mentioned the controlling statute. I mean, that the death certificate law can say what it says, but we still have to comply with 3701.17. So why don't you address that?
Yeah, sure. So 3701.17 is really brought into this case by ODH. They've asserted that this statute applies to cause of death information maintained in the EDRS. We would submit that it doesn't apply at all. But from a statutory interpretation standpoint, there really are two issues. The first question is this statute unambiguous? We would submit that it can be read as unambiguous, but the only unambiguous interpretation of that is that the term individual in that statute only applies to information that's generated by a living person during their lifetime, and that's applied to ODH. The other argument, which I think is
how do you get to individual has to be living.
So you read that statute
without adding any words to the statute.
You don't need to add any words to that statute, Your Honor. You can look at the term individual and say individual means living person. You can contrast that, for instance, with 3705.23, which refers to a decedent when it's talking about somebody who's a dead person. So the General Assembly itself has used different terminology to refer to somebody who is dead versus somebody who is living. Now, I would submit in this case, individual certainly could be understood commonly to mean someone who is dead and someone who is alive. That's where you get into the first issue, which is whether this statute is unambiguous. We would submit that the right answer to that question in this case is that it is ambiguous. Once you've concluded that it's ambiguous, now you have to look to legislative intent in interpreting that statute. And that's where you look to 3705.231. You can look to the coroner statute, RC.
So under your reading, there is no protection at all under the health privacy law for someone once they die for their health information.
So as to cause of death information specifically, and that's the only type of information.
Well, but what you're talking about is the definition of what individual means. So if individual only means living person, then under your reading of the law, once someone dies, that law offers no protection. So someone can go through all their health records. Correct.
And, Your Honor, we submit that the legislature has already made that choice. The coroner statute.
But that is your understanding of the law.
We would submit that
there's no protection. So once someone dies, their health information is not protected at all.
Correct, Your Honor. If a person is dead and medical information about that person is created, such as an autopsy report, that information is not protected.
So Mr. Ford.
Yes.
3705.23 does provide for the first 5 years after someone dies that their social security number cannot be included on a certified copy of their death certificate. Could the legislature have specified that it didn't want any other information that it wanted to go out? If it drafted this section, couldn't it have
added some other information to be excluded?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I think that's a glaring omission from the death certificate certified copy statute. It's also a glaring omission from the protected health information statute itself. We know that the legislature throughout the revised code in the coroner statute, in the certified copy, in the statute dealing with certified copies of death certificate, as well as just the general inspection right, has neglected in the protected health information statute to say, oh, by the way, if you comply with those requirements, you walk into the local registrar's office and request it or call them, that's not protected health information. It's simply silent on that. And so again, this gets back to the fundamental question here, at least the initial question about this statute. Is this statute unambiguous? And we would submit, Your Honors, that given the statute in context, which refers to past, present, and future medical condition, which we know a deceased person cannot have a present or future medical condition, in addition to the other portions of the revised code, including that statute that refer to decedent instead of individual, that RC 37.01.17 is ambiguous. At that point, you are now looking to what was the legislature looking to accomplish here. And our position here is that it would be absurd to conclude that the legislature made this information publicly available through these various statutes, but intended for 3701.17 to apply to a deceased person and the cause of death information recorded on that death certificate.
So the General Assembly, in a variety of statutes, they use deceased individual, living individual, living or deceased individual. Why not here, with the general use of the word individual, it means any individual?
Your Honor, and that gets to the question of whether it's ambiguous. The test for whether a statute is ambiguous is whether there are more than one reasonable interpretation. I would stand here today and say it's very hard for me to say that it is totally unreasonable to say that the word individual, standing alone, even in the context of a statute that I would say, you know, it's more reasonable to suggest that it refers to living individual, nevertheless could also refer to deceased individuals. But I would also submit that it's also reasonable to say that no, it refers to a living individual because the type of information that that statute is describing, past, present, and future, clearly would only refer to a living individual. That in conjunction with the fact that 3701.17, that one of the only ways that you can obtain the information is with the consent of the individual who is the subject of that information. Well, of course, a person dies, and let's say that there's a coroner that does an autopsy report and collects information about that individual. Well, there is never a scenario now where that person who is now dead could say, well, I'm okay with you releasing that information. And so the omission, again, in that statute of the legislature saying that an executor or administrator can, in the stead of the person, authorize the release of that PHI, that's simply not in the statute. And so I think the conclusion that this court has to reach about 3701.17 is that it is ambiguous. Once that conclusion is reached, now you're looking to legislative intent.
I guess I'm really confused by the leap from that, well, there's no provision for an executor in the statute to release information. Therefore, the statute has to be ambiguous. I mean, why wouldn't the answer to that mean there's no provision, so there's no provision, so executor can't do that? And that would seem to be the plain reading of the statute.
You know, I wouldn't submit that is the sole inquiry, that's missing some language, therefore it is ambiguous. The test is whether there's more than one reasonable construction of
the
statute.
Well, I'm not sure that's really the test, right? I mean, the test, at least more recently, we have said ambiguity occurs when you can't say with certainty that one meaning is better than the other, not that there's two possible readings.
Well, and I think that gets back to the code itself. The legislature has said to this court that in interpreting our statutes, that if there is more than one reasonable interpretation of that statute, you should look to the other provisions of the revised code, you should look to overall purpose, legislative intent. And in this case, in Title 37 itself, there's much evidence of what the legislature was looking to do with this specific type of information. And I would say more generally to your concern, Justice Wine, with information about deceased persons generally, we can look at the coroner's autopsy statute, which this court has addressed previously as well. And that statute, RC 313.10, makes very clear that the observations and conclusions, which of course would mean cause of death, are public record.
Okay, but I mean, it seems pretty nonsensical that coroner's investigation, coroner's is going to be a public record, but I don't think most people would think that, say, someone's all of someone's hospital records become a public record once they die, which they would under your reading.
No, and that's not, that isn't our reading, Your Honor. We're not suggesting that information that's generated within an individual's lifetime, so a hospital record, a doctor's diagnosis, upon their death, that expires.
But what you just said was that individual only means a living person. If individual only means a living person, then that would mean that the health privacy law provides no protections for any of a person's health records once they die.
And Your Honor, the reason for that individual interpretation is to show, simply demonstrate, that this statute is ambiguous, that there is not a one reasonable interpretation.
But individual has to mean the same things in all cases. It can't just mean living in cases where it helps you. It has to mean the same thing across the board. So.
Well, I think to Chief Justice Kennedy's earlier point is the legislature is not always consistent about how they describe dead individuals and living individuals. So, for instance, in Title 37 and other portions, they use the term decedent. They don't use individual.
Well, but we can't say, well, individual means something different in this case than other cases. It's got to mean the same in every case, in this statute at least.
I don't know that that's true, Your Honor. I think that you have to look at this statute on its own. You have to determine whether it is ambiguously written, and then I think you have to determine what is the legislative intent here. And that's where, because I submit that it is ambiguous, you do need to look to other provisions of the revised code, in particular Title 35, to determine what the legislature intended to cover with protected health information. I believe yes, Your Honor.
What if the General Assembly intended this? So you walk into a local registrar's office contained in a county, and they're going to allow you to fill out the form, show your photo ID, and obtain a death certificate that you pay a fee for. But what it's doing is really barring the state's health department from releasing mass data. In reading those statutes, it could be a fair reading that a local board, can do something that they're prohibiting the state from doing in mass. How would you argue against that?
Sure, I would submit that the legislature has actually done that with other types of information. So in the special master's opinion talks about this towards the end. They talk about criminal investigatory information, arrests. That information is compiled in mass by the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation, but it's not releasable en masse to the public. Nevertheless, someone could go and obtain every single incident report and try to collect that information and create their own database. Here, what we would say is that the same thing could happen. Someone could go into every local registrar in the state and try to photograph and make that database. That the legislature hasn't done the same thing. It hasn't specifically said in the death certificate law or in any other partial law that specific as to this cause of death information, we really don't want the central database to be produced to the public. It certainly has done that elsewhere. It didn't do that here, and I would submit that that is very telling of its legislative intent with respect to protecting official cause of death information, i.e. why the state has said that somebody has died.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Kearney.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. Two points show that Ohio law protects our personal information, our names and our addresses, when the state otherwise discloses information from the death information database. First, the health privacy law's plain terms say so, with no exception for death. And second, the possibility of limited workarounds to get similar info from individual records from local offices simply confirms that this information, this avenue, is not available for mass data mining. Let's start with the text of the health privacy law, 370117. It tells us three things: who is protected, what is protected, and how to release aggregate data. Who is protected is individuals. And I know my friend on the other side didn't talk at all about the CNN case, where this case, 6-1, decided that student data was kept private even after someone was not only no longer a student, but was also deceased. And it specifically rejected this precise argument about, well, then we can't go to an executor, then we can't go to the parents anymore. This court took that on and said, no, the court or the legislature would have added the words living or deceased. The word individual covers everyone. And it is true, if you accept their broad reading, they do have a backup narrower argument about only cause of death info, but their broad reading of individuals have no privilege means the minute we die, everything spills out.
Except what
so then the what?
What about the Miami student versus Miami University? That expressed that in the CNN situation, that the public office carries the burden to establish the applicability of how that statute works.
Sure, and here we can and will continue to march through the health privacy law. First, we believe who is protected is individuals, living or dead. What is protected is anything that reflects your medical health condition, medical treatment, past or future. And so here is where I want to take on the idea that, oh, well, cause of death information isn't determined until after, unlike treatment before. That's wrong for a couple of reasons. First, it doesn't matter that it's the morning after that someone fills out a form. My cause of death, by definition, cause comes before effect without time travel. Cause comes first. The minute I die, whatever I die of, you know, the heart attack reflects that I had whatever situation beforehand. And in fact, we know that because most of the time, you know, coroners only do very few cause of death determinations. Autopsies are very rare. Most of the time, this is filled out by statute by the attending physician, the person taking care of you right up until you die. And consider, for example, plain old lab reports. We draw someone's blood, we send it off to the lab, it takes a 24-hour turnaround. While we're waiting, the person dies. The fact that the results come in the next day or get written down or churned out by a computer or an analyst staring at the blood data doesn't change the fact that what it took a snapshot of was the condition before the person died.
Except so your cause you of can't death, determine cause of death until a person dies.
Well, true, the determination. But it's just.
But that's the information that's on the record.
Right, but the determination
is not generated
sure,
until
the determination
the person dies.
You died of liver disease reflects that you had liver disease. You can't separate, you can't pull that out. The determination that you died of cancer shows that you had cancer. So it reflects that information.
But if somebody has heart failure and they usually have renal failure at the same time because they're balancing them back and forth, if the doctor chooses renal failure, there's not even a disclosure of the heart failure. I mean, why? And I guess what I'm concerned about is that we've got this conflict between two statutes, one dealing with public records, one dealing with health privacy. The health privacy concern now moves to a point where the person's not alive and that information was generated after they were done being alive. We've got another statute that says if the death is a violent death, it's specifically exempt from the public records 149 statute. So do you, and our law says in the Warren newspapers case that if there's a doubt, we construe the public records part liberally. How do you meet your burden with that law in place?
Certainly, let me take that piece by piece, why there's not a conflict with these other alternate releases and why this is still covered. Again, the determination is the next day, but just like if we watch a videotape and determine what happens, the recording was made, the actual facts of a car accident, even if there's an accident reconstruction, the facts may be reviewed later, but what happened, the renal failure, the heart attack, whatever, what happened occurred while the person was still alive, that's what caused them to die. So it reflects a past medical status. And we do that all the time where we honor a person's wishes even after death. The whole field of estate law and wills is about a donor's intent. Letting the person decide what to do with their remains, that I'm an organ donor, it says on my license. These are all my choices. So we do have dead people's wishes protected all the time. Now, as far as these other workarounds, forgot to mention in the affirmative part that the aggregate data stuff, there's particularly a provision. Why else would the legislature have said, when you release this information in an aggregate statistical or summary form, take off any identifying information? And I want to correct my colleague respectfully who says we refuse to release cause of data information.
That's not so. We release cause of death data on thousands and thousands of people. What we stripped off was the name and address. So it's not like they have a list of names and they want to know, what did these people die of? They have all the people's deaths. They just don't have the names attached, which is specifically the identifying information we're supposed to strip. Now, about those exceptions, about the certified copy law or the walk in and see a copy law or the autopsy law, I'll take them one at a time. First of all, the most important thing is that very first one, the certified copy law 3705.23, is the only one that applies to us, the state, the Department of Health. The others are locals. As to the Department of Health, yes, you can come in and get a actual death certificate. For starters, we're going to charge you $22. So a year's worth of deaths, about 140,000 deaths a year in Ohio, that's $3 million. So you can tender that check and then we can start talking about the rest. Next, you actually have to have a lot of information. You have to actually have the person's name, date of birth, date of death, place of death, and even the parents' names, full names of the mother and the father. That's a lot of information. So that is not an order. A death certificate is not a public record in the generic 14943 sense, because if it were a generic public record, anybody can just walk in and say, I want it. Here, and you only have to pay, you know, the few cents a page.
But Mr. Kearney, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're talking about the electronic database, which is a specific activity that under 149 on the public records law, the state's required to give over. This database is its activity in gathering this information and assimilating it. And so with a public record, if you got it, unless there's a specific exception, you got to disclose it.
Right. Well, first of all, the database is more than just death certificates. As I understand it, the database actually has about 400 fields for things like car accidents. It even says whether you were the driver, whether you were the passenger, whether you were a pedestrian. I don't think it says whether the passenger had a driver's license or not, but it does have a lot of data in it. So it is more than just the handful of things on
the
death certificate.
Right, and people ask for the fields that they want.
Right, so when people ask for select fields, they're not asking for a death certificate. The analogy to, oh, this is just like a file cabinet, is not so. This contains a lot more, and we do have an express exception, the health privacy law, that says when you spit out mass data, don't give names and addresses. And as far as getting individual records at the county level, we know that digital data, a lot of times, can be a lot easier to get than sometimes just looking at a piece of paper. But sometimes getting access to digital data is a lot harder than just looking at paper, whether it's that you can't connect to the network or that there's a state law that says when you're doing data mining, we're going to treat mass data differently. And we've done that in a lot of areas with court records that used to be open where you could just drive down to the courthouse and see. But once we realized the capacity for searching mass data and getting mass information, we start putting restrictions on what gets put online, social security numbers, other things. And here, this statistical data, particular section C of 370117, covers that. As to going to the counties for individual records, that's not the same. Because if it were, we wouldn't be having this fight. I'd invite Mr. Ludlow to drive to 88 counties and do his thing.
I want to posit one last question here. His request was made in 2020. What was going on in 2020 was a world pandemic. He made the request again in 2021. And if there isn't the ability under the public records law to check the release of information on the number of Ohioans who died from the COVID-19 pandemic because of this interpretation, are we really doing justice to what the legislature wanted to do with the public records law? The idea is transparency to ensure there's no corruption.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and here's why. First, the legislature made that decision, that policy balancing of saying, we're going to give this information. If you want to know how many people died of COVID, we gave that up. If you want to know their names and addresses, that's a lot different.
Except how do we know we're right? If Mr. Ludlow, as a representative of a newspaper, wants to check those records for himself to make sure that the Department of Health is telling the truth, why can't he do that?
Because the statute tells us don't give out names and addresses. There are a lot of areas, for example, where people, whether it's
a sensitive area, whether it's drug overdoses or suicides, where we want to develop mass data, but we don't want to look at every individual and say, this is what happened to your family member or to yourself after you're gone. And the legislature made that choice. And as to going to get individual records one by one, I honestly don't represent the county local registrars, and so I don't know what county's capabilities even are. My understanding is that they have to index things by name, and that if you just say, tell me who all died of this, that they, someone in Hancock County might not be able to tell you without plowing through everything. They might not be able to tell you unless you say, I want the Stephen Carney record. And
but
then
the concern, though, was even without name, the concern was for one of the reasons the health department gave was for address, too. And if Mr. Ludlow was trying to research which areas of the state COVID was killing more people and compare that with other data, he wouldn't be able to do that because the health department said, oh, you could even identify it by address.
Well, we didn't give home addresses, but I believe the data is available by county. I think county is one of the fields they got or that is available. So there's date data. So if you want to see that deaths went up in June and down in July and spiked back up in August, date data is on there. County data is on there. The only thing is name and home address. So you don't know it's John Smith at 123 Main Street in Steubenville, but you do know everything else. But again, that legislative choice was made by the legislature, because what I haven't heard, for all the talk about, I can go in and snap pictures with my camera of one record at a time, is any real definitional way to get out of the public health information law, other than to say either the broad brush doesn't cover individuals at all, in which case all of our records spill out the moment we die, all our treatments, or somehow the cause of death information doesn't exist until someone determines it. But again, that's not so, because the information of what led up to your death, by definition, occurs before your death. The fact that someone reviews it the morning after doesn't change the fact that it happened and that your medical status is reflected. If you tell someone that, you know, John Q. Smith died of liver disease, you're telling them John Q. Smith before April 15th had liver disease, whether it was for one day or 6 years, he had liver disease. And if we don't want that to come out, again, whether it's sensitive issues, whether it's any number of reasons, the legislature has made that choice to let the dead rest in peace and say, we're not going to spill out all of your data, at least not in this mass data form. And if they want to go county to county and see what records they can get by taking pictures from other people who are not my client, then they're welcome to it. If they want to come ask my client for all those information, then fine, pay us $22 per, that's about $3 million a year, and also supply us the name, the date of birth, the date of death, the parents' names, and the place of death. And if you have all that information, you follow the law, we'll follow the law. But if you don't have that, we're not going to say, well, you could do it, get in through the back door anyway, so we might as well open the front door for you. No, the front door requires you to have the key, to have the data already, and it requires you to pay the admission fee. And if you're not willing to do that, we are going to protect Ohioans' information. We want openness in public records. We want people to know what the government is doing, but we don't want to use openness to government records to be a gateway to see all the private information of your fellow citizens.
Mr. Carney, would it be fair to compare, since it's not very clear in the law, we're trying to divine how these two statutes work together, would it be fair to look at something like defamation law, which if you die in the middle of a suit where you said you've been defamed, it doesn't survive your death?
Well, I would say two things, Your Honor. First, I don't think there's a conflict between the two, because as I look down, do we have individuals? Yes, we do. Does this reflect their past status? Yes, we do. Does the statute tell us to strip off health information, or when we give health information to strip off identifying name information? Yes, we do. So I think that's all so clear, there's no clash. If I come over to the other law, as far as my client's concerned, it's give this particular record when they pay $22 and provide the name and all the entrance info. If they don't do that, so I have a set of instructions as a Department of Health that tells me keep this information
out. No, I'm talking
out.
About the database. I'm not talking about the death certificates. I'm talking about the database,
right,
which is the activity of the Department of Health. And why, just the dangers of the Department of Health being able to determine for itself on case law that it doesn't have to provide certain information because its opinion is that it would be violating some other law. You're using case law to essentially deny public access to records under a statute. So why wouldn't you be able to look at something like the defamation, where it's clear under the case law that it doesn't survive if the person dies before the suit's over?
I see my time is up, but if I may briefly answer, Your Honor. First, we don't think that there's any ambiguity. The legislature tells us don't give this information out on individuals. We don't see any ambiguity with the public record law. And second, as to defamation law, where we do look to case law over centuries, is we do have not only centuries of case law that does honor the dead in various areas, wills and estates, what to do with your remains, and so forth, but we also do have the case law of this court in 2020 saying in the CNN versus Bellbrook Schools that you should not treat the word student to mean only former students who have lost protection. You said that protection remains even after death. So we're following your case law. Ironically, we were in that case. We actually asked for openness there, and the court told us we were wrong, so now we're following that. This court told us, no, you state are wrong about that when we were in amicus supporting openness, and so now we follow that, and we say, oh, someone's individual rights are respected even long after they're gone. And again, sometimes digital access is made harder than paper access for good reason, because data mining allows different things. I hope Your Honor's data access is now restored. With that, we ask you to affirm the court below.
Thank you. Mr. Ford, you've used your time, but we will let you take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. The CNN case, which Mr. Carney relies on, really has no application here. And the reason for that is that there was no dispute in that case that the information at issue was at one point protected. Our position in this case is that cause of death information, whether it comes from a coroner or it comes from a family physician, is never protected. So this isn't a question of it expiring upon death. The person, when that information is generated and submitted to ODH, that person is already dead. Justice Brunner raised a really important point, and I think it's worth emphasizing something that did come up in the CNN case that wasn't applicable there, but is very applicable here, which is that Ohio law has consistently recognized that dead people do not have privacy rights. This is a privacy law. That is the legislature's understanding of that is very much reflected in the coroner statute. Autopsy reports, and I can't imagine anything that is more revealing about an individual's medical history, about why they died, about very sensitive issues, those observations and conclusions are public record. So the legislature has not reflected any desire to give dead individuals privacy rights. And that's all we're saying here, is that this specific type of information, cause of death, the reason the government is saying this person died, which should be subject to verification by the press or other private individuals, that is not protected health information, and therefore it shouldn't be covered. Your Honor, my time is up, and I appreciate the additional minute. Thank you very much. We ask that the court reverse the 10th District and affirm, reinstate the Court of Claims decision.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision from the court.